today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the price of popcorn at Disneyland is going up, and it's going up quite a bit. And if you're traveling to or from Denver in the next couple of days, be prepared for some snow.
In our Smarter Traveler segment coming up at 3:20, we update you on the strike that's impacting Marriott hotels around the country. And once again, reminding our smoking friends how to avoid those nasty $250 hotel smoking charges.
Gwen Duncan of Cordially Yours Travel is our favorite travel agent. She's always conjuring up something interesting. Today at 3:35, with Halloween approaching, she gives us an update on a number of haunted places you can visit.
Craft beers are all the rage these days, and Lake Tahoe is getting into the spirit of things. At 3:50, we tell you about the Lake Tahoe Craft Beer Trail.
From beer to things that go boo in the night, we welcome you to one of the most interesting travel shows in the country. We're proud to be just a little different. Welcome to The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise. To
blood to Alaska, I go north to rush you some.
Sakes, we're back. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, also known as the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for taking a little time out of your beautiful Sunday afternoon to join us. Mark, I have to say, I am so glad I live in Northern California on this day. I mean, the weather here in Sacramento has been so fantastic. It's the kind of thing that kind of reminds me as to why I live here and why perhaps it's so expensive to live in this part of the country where the weather is so nice.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The spring and the summertime here, or I mean the spring and the fall are well worth the summertime. And because our winters are moderate, certainly by standards of other destinations in the country. And you know, now that they've built airplanes that can take off in the fog, for a long time that was kind of a problem, especially if you were in the travel business or if you were a businessman who traveled a lot. You didn't want to be in a place like Sacramento, because when I first started in the travel business, I can't tell you how many times out at the airport, and older veteran road warriors will remember this, fleets of buses ferrying people to San Francisco and Oakland, generally Oakland, and sometimes San Jose, to be able to catch planes that couldn't land in Sacramento and couldn't take off because of the Thule fog that we had here. And of course, in all of their brilliance, do you know that the area in the entire Sacramento region that has the worst fog is the area where our current airport is?
Yeah.
So until the technology came that allowed airplanes to land in quarter mile visibility, when they used to have a mile or a mile and a half, well, in Sacramento, it was frequent that everything got knocked out. And the only way that you could get in or out of Sacramento was by bus. And they poured people onto buses and luggage onto buses and went to Oakland, where your airplane was waiting. And then you went to wherever you were going. Of course, by then you had missed your connection and life was difficult. But so fortunately, we don't have to deal with that anymore. Airplanes now can land with much less visibility because of the technology. They can land safely in much shorter visibility than they ever used to be able to.
It's kind of like saying, wow, I remember back in the dark ages.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now you hardly ever hear of a flight being delayed by fog. San Francisco, when they have a low ceiling and they have to space the planes out more because they don't have enough runways there, it's frequent that they will have delays. But it's not like it used to be with the fog, where the San Francisco airport would be closed for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 hours. And my goodness, that would just mess up everything. So, you know, technology, I guess, is, of course, the flip side is that one of the things that's polluting the planet the quickest is airplanes. So, you know, the good and the bad, you have to take them together, I guess.
There you go. Is that kind of sort of almost part of the travel news? By the way, if you want to follow along with links to our guests and much more, just visit travelguysradio.com during the show, after the show, whenever you like. And at the top of every Travel Guys Radio program, we do bring you up to date on what's going on in the travel news with, well, we always started off with, of course, Huey Lewis and the news.
And the news. For the listener who asked me the other day, said, Tom, she says, I love the program and I listen all the time, and you guys do this thing, the travel news, at the beginning of the program. And she says, you always play this Huey Lewis song. And she says, I think it's the power of love, and I can't figure out why it is that you would play the power of love when you're getting ready to do the travel news. And I said, well, it's Huey Lewis and the news. I didn't want to be rude, so anyways.
And she goes, I get it.
And she said, oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, you know, so anyhow.
All right, anyway, what you got on the news
today? What would travel
today?
News be without an update on support animals? In this case, a lady with a support squirrel was taken off of a Frontier Airlines flight at International Airport in Orlando on Tuesday. They had to get everybody off the plane, and a squirrel. Frontier said the passenger had noted in her reservation she was bringing an emotional support animal with her on the flight, mm-hmm. but did not indicate it was a squirrel. Squirrels, if you may not be aware, Tom, are considered rodents, and rodents are not one of the emotional support animals allowed on planes.
Did you see or read her comment when they you know, escorted her away and so forth, and she said something about, you know, when this is all over with, I'm going to own most of that plane. Because I guess she was going to probably thinking about a lawsuit there. Nice. I don't think that's going to get very far.
I see. How cute. We mentioned in the headlines that food prices at Disneyland and Walt Disney World have taken a jump. You know, and sometimes you go and, you know, something that was 4.25 is 4.5. But things are going up quite a bit it's at Disneyland. It looks like the price increases are about 20%. Across the board on food items. Some things went up as much as a buck and a half. So fountain beverages went from $3.29 to $3.99. Slushes went from $4.50 to $5.50. So the price of Disneyland went up. I guess that doesn't really surprise anybody. Here's some good news for travelers. American Airlines is restoring carry-on bags to basic economy fares. You all are familiar with these basic economy fares, which have sprung up as an answer to Spirit and Frontier Airlines and their bare bones fares, where they strip everything out and sell you an airplane ticket for $4. And then you have to buy everything, including the walk on the jetway to get on the plane. So the legacy carriers, American, Delta, United, have copied those fares. They call them generally something like basic economy. Well, with those fares, you can't check any bags, of course, as you can't with many bags on the legacy carriers. But you can't even bring a carry. You can't put anything in the overhead. It has to fit under the seat. Well, apparently, customers have gotten kind of savvy to this and decided that to save $20-$25, you can't carry anything with you hardly on the plane, and they were not buying the tickets. So Delta Airlines was the first to say quietly, you know what, we'll let you put something in the overhead and not charge you for that on this basic economy ticket. And so apparently it worked, because American Airlines has now copied Delta. United has not come along yet, but for right now, check this out before when you're buying your ticket, mm-hmm. but for right now, the basic economy fares appear on American Airlines and Delta Airlines to include the ability to put something in the overhead. To me, that's a fairly big thing, because you can pack a suitcase and take it with you in the overhead for a 2-3 day trip, as long as you don't take liquids over 3.5 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
You can take it along. Now that basic economy ticket starts to look a little bit more interesting. Be careful, though, my fellow travelers. Those tickets come with no seating assignments, and you're the last people on the plane, so you're going to sit in a middle seat towards the back. And if all of those things are okay with you, then you can save some money. But if they're not, what's going to happen is if you start buying those things, each of them one at a time, you're going to find that by the time you now get back to all of the benefits that a regular coach ticket has, you will have paid a lot more for your travel. So decide one or the other and do your homework. And if it says basic economy, now with some carriers, you can put something into the overhead. Okay, quickly here. A Portland man has decided that he wants to convert cruise ships to house the homeless. Figured that this would come from Portland. In the Keep Portland Weird department, he doesn't have a ship yet, and he doesn't have a plan or a dock, but he says he thinks it's a good idea, and the Portland City Council has decided a feasibility study is in order. So it's possible, they say, not only for homeless people, but for folks who have recently immigrated, for situations where you're building something and you need to have a lot of workers housed nearby. You wouldn't have as much transportation, you wouldn't have as much traffic, etc. So not only just for homeless people, but Portland is looking at cruise ships to kind of solve what is a housing crisis there. An American woman was arrested and fined $4,000 for having cannabis on a cruise ship in the Bahamas. Her lawyer said that she did, I'm sorry, in Bermuda. Her lawyer said that she did it without thought. Yeah, right. She pleaded guilty to four counts of drug possession and apologized to the court. This little article here from Travel Pulse says, as a reminder, don't bring drugs during your travels and you won't have these problems. Florence is going to cost the city of Charleston about $65 million in tourism losses. Charleston is a huge tourism destination in the South. And so meetings, things that they can identify, hotels, restaurants, and attractions shutting down due to the storm, meetings that have been canceled after the storm. They found that the area lost about $9 million each day in the 3 days before the storm and the 2 days after. And the rest of the money is for meetings that have to be canceled or rescheduled in the city of Charleston. We mentioned in the headlines that the first big snowstorm of the season is coming to the Rockies this weekend. I checked just before we went on the air. United Airlines has not issued any travel waivers for Denver yet, but if you are planning to head to Denver today or tomorrow, it's entirely possible that on Southwest or United, it's entirely possible that you could encounter some delays. So if you have a tight connection, make sure that you check your app ahead of time so that you're not heading into more trouble than you can get out of. And here's a list of, this is kind of interesting, Tom, a list of the fastest growing and the fastest shrinking airports.
Okay.
In the country. And it's moderately interesting. The airports that are shrinking the most are the airports that have lost hubs in the last 10 years. Memphis lost a Northwest hub. Cincinnati lost a kind of sort of a Delta hub. Cincinnati or a Cleveland lost a United hub. But some of the airports that are growing the fastest, San Francisco, its traffic is up 55%. Seattle, of course, we have three airlines serving Sacramento and Seattle now, is one of the fastest growing airports. Oakland, incidentally, is one of the 10 fastest declining airports in the country. Remember 15, 20 years ago, there was a huge rush to go to Oakland because San Francisco was so overtaxed. Well, again, that technology thing has allowed more flights in and out of San Francisco, so you have less need for an airport on the other side of the bay. But anyway, just kind of interesting information on many of these news stories can be found at travelguysradio.com if you are interested in reading up a little more on any of the travel news. And that is your travel news for today.
All righty, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, and coming up in 3 minutes or less, an update on the strikes that are impacting Marriott hotels, and also some advice to our smoking friends out there on how to avoid those $250 hotel smoking charges. That's next here on the Travel Guys. One once again, follow along with what we talk about here on the Travel and Entertainment Guys at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark and Tom with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as always, right around this time, you know, 3:20 every Sunday afternoon, we're here with our special Make You a Smarter Traveler segment. And Mark, we got strikes at the Marriotts and other information to share. What do you got for us?
Well, we've had this in the travel news the last couple of weeks, and I thought it's probably a little more appropriate at this point, since we've told people that these wildcat strikes are going on in different cities around the country, to talk about it more in terms of making you a smarter traveler. In other words, if you're headed to one of these cities where now, right now, the hotels that are originally it was Hyatt hotels that were impacted. It's moved to Marriott hotels, and now it's just Marriott hotels that are being affected. It's Marriott hotels right now. As of Saturday, in Detroit, Boston, San Jose, Oakland, San Francisco, Maui, and Honolulu. Clayton Whitehead, one of our road reporters, was in Boston earlier this weekend and reported that, yeah, it's kind of chaotic around Marriott hotels. Interestingly enough, Tom, they haven't shut down any of these two dozen or so properties, which is kind of Marriott's has been their philosophy in the past, is to try to play through it and to use management people and stuff like that. But I'm just going to tell you that when it comes to making beds and washing towels and cleaning toilets, management people are not all that good at that.
Oh.
So Marriott is – they're not closing the properties. Also, mm-hmm. significantly enough, they're not offering any sort of discount.
That was going to be my question is is that pretty standard when you find hotels have strikes? Or is there some cases where they do?
Well, in some cases they will say, you know, for example, our restaurants are shut down. Our rooms are up and running and we've got room service or we've got this or that, but the restaurant isn't open or the gift shop isn't open. Or here's one aspect of the pool and the fitness center are not open because we don't have anybody. The person who regulates the chemicals in the pool is on strike and we don't have anybody with that skill. So we've shut that area down. So that's not uncommon, but it is. That's the reason that I brought this up today. Is because I know we have some road warriors who listen to our program pretty regularly, and I'm a Marriott guy myself, love Marriott hotels, but if I were booked into a Marriott hotel in the next couple of weeks, I just stayed in one in Cincinnati a week and a half ago, I made sure I called them ahead of time and said, hey, you guys are not part of this strike situation, are you yet? And they said, no, but you know, it's just kind of popping up. So the point is, you check with your Marriott hotel a week ahead of time and they say everything is fine. You might want to call back a day or two ahead of time and ask again. Or you can check a list. We put a link at TravelGuysRadio.com to where you can see a list of all of the individual Marriott hotels that are affected. Because in these cities that we're talking about, Detroit, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, Maui, Honolulu, some of these places are pretty nearby us. It's not all the Marriott hotels. And remember, Marriott has recently merged with Sheraton. So now you've got, in some cases, cities, it's some Sheraton hotels. It's not all hotels with the Marriott name on the marquee, which is another Marriott brand, out front. In some cases, Westin or Sheraton hotels have been targeted. So if you're staying in a Marriott or a Starwood property in the next couple of weeks, you'll want to do your homework and just go online and make sure that your hotel is not impacted. If it is impacted, then the hotel should be willing to waive their cancellation policies and fees, and you should be able, if you want to get accommodations at another place, or you can call the hotel and ask them how it's going on. You can also go to TripAdvisor or some of the other rating sites and take a look at ratings that may have come in since the hotel strike has started. So now those are just some ideas.
Yeah. Is it unreasonable if you end up in one of these hotels that's striking to be able to ask for any kind of discount or whatever?
If I got to a hotel, especially a Marriott property, mm-hmm. Yeah. And something that I wanted was not there, right, and I didn't know ahead of time, I absolutely would ask for a discount. Now, because the pool's closed, you can't ask for 50% off a $300 hotel room. You know, but a 10% discount or a 15% discount would not be out of line. Or if you're a Marriott customer and you're not being totally unreasonable and saying I'm never staying in a Marriott hotel again because your pool is closed, you may find that hotels are more liberal with fake money, with vouchers. So, you know, if the pool is closed and you mention that to the front desk, they may already have a plan. So they may say, oh, you know, how about if I give you a voucher here for breakfast in our restaurant? You know, the buffet is $25 and let me treat you to breakfast. So by asking, in some cases, you can get, you know, in some cases you can get something. So my suggestion is if you get one of these hotels that are impacted and you're there, is you may not notice anything. You may come and go and not be impacted, and good for you. If you are, then it's not inappropriate for ask for an appropriate adjustment.
Got it.
Okay, one other quick thing here. We've talked about smoking in hotel rooms, regular tobacco smoke and funny tobacco smoke in hotel rooms. Weed may be legal in California and some other states adjoining California, but it doesn't mean that you can smoke in hotel rooms just like you can't smoke regular cigarettes. And please, the point of bringing this up again is to really emphasize to people that if you take the car's ashtray and you empty it in the hotel room, you're going to get charged, whether you smoked in the room or not. If you leave your marijuana paraphernalia and your bag of weed out, you're going to get charged, whether you smoked in the hotel room or not. So be a little smarter about this. And the reason I'm saying this is because practically every week I'm seeing things in news feeds that I get from people who are complaining that, you know, they got charged for this and I didn't smoke in the room, and they swear on a stack of Bibles they didn't smoke in the room. But what happened was they did something to create the impression and maybe even the smell that they did smoke in the room. So for goodness gracious, know that hotels are really cracking down on this. And if you are a smoker, know that, you know, if you go to a bar or someplace where there's a lot of cigarette smoking going on, there aren't as many places like this anymore. But if you go to one of those places and then you take that into your hotel room, it could end up costing you some money. So just be careful on the whole smoking thing with hotels.
All righty. Coming up, we'll take a short news break, and then Gwen Duncan joins us. We're going looking for haunted places to visit here in lieu of the big Halloween. Yeah, this is going to be a scary one. Gwen's got some great stuff for us. That's next right here on The Travel Guys. Hello there, my friends. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And guess what? It's that haunting month, the month of October. Sometimes it's fun to go to scary places during Halloween. And so Mark and I were talking, and we got an email from Gwen in regards to that conversation, places to go and visit. And I guess get all spooked out during Halloween this time of the year. Welcome, Gwen, to another edition of The Travel Guys.
Well, thank you, guys. Now, I've sent over to Mark, and I know Mark put on his website a bunch of different website links for you to find all kinds of extra things. There's tons here.
If you go to travelguysradio.com, we've got enough haunted places there to keep you busy all afternoon.
Yeah, I think so. But I thought I would call and pick out just a couple of them to entice you guys.
Oh, as you know, I'm a big ghost guy, so this is all very intriguing to me. So, Gwen, tell us some of the places in Northern California and maybe nearby in Nevada that we should consider for Halloween journeys.
Yeah, why don't you, if you can, kind of start chronologically closest to farthest, if that will work, Gwen.
I can do that. The closest one that I'm going to talk about is out of Stockton, actually, and it's called East 8 Mile Road. Now, it's not a haunted house. It's more of a location, but they say it's one of the most haunted places in California, and it's a stretch of road, and it has what it is this place where a lot of the big trucks that carry heavy equipment go on. And they've got many, many stories from these guys that they'll go along this road and they'll see a scary woman with a, like a tattered white dress or something, standing right in the middle of the roadway.
Oh.
And they'll pass her, and they're thinking, what did I just see? So they'll hurry and turn around, and she's sitting in their back seat.
Oh, no, no, I don't want that. I think I'm done with this part of the program. That's way too creepy for me. Holy cow.
During a full moon, there's a Native American girl that's wandering around there and in the same area, and she screams in the nighttime only during the full moon. And they said that it's a place that's just really haunted. A lot of paranormal fans go there just to experience that. Doesn't that sound fun, Tom?
Oh, yeah. You know, it, you know, well, yes and no. I don't know.
Yeah, Tom's a little queasy, I can tell. What else have you got, Gwen?
Okay. Virginia City. Now, that's not that far to drive, but they're in Virginia City. They've got a couple of hotels and a mine that are all haunted. And the one thing I thought I would just mention is the Silver Queen Hotel, where you can still rent rooms. But and that's, they said it's one of the most haunted ones here in there in Nevada. Anyway, there's a spirit there, and it's supposed to have been a prostitute, and it's a young girl, and it's in room 11. And they said that it's a spirit of a girl named Rosie, and she was a young prostitute who committed suicide while she was there in the 1800s by going into the bathroom and slitting her wrist. But they said that when she makes her appearance, known by rattling the doorknobs and the phantom footsteps and voices within room 11.
Wow, Gwen is really good at all this detail, don't you think,
Yeah,
Mark?
She really is. You know, Tom, that the paranormal people, when you talk to them and you say, well, you know, do spirits, is Halloween? Most of the paranormal people will tell you that Halloween is not necessarily it's a night when we celebrate the spirits, but it's not necessarily a night when the spirits celebrate, if that makes sense.
Okay.
If you believe in such things that Gwen is telling us. Gwen, where's our next stop?
Okay. The next one would be San Jose, the Winchester Mystery House. I think everybody knows about that.
Oh, yes.
Remember? That started construction in 1884, but for 36 or 39 years, Sarah Winchester is the one who, when she passed away in 1922, she spent about $5 million, on a construction there, and she believed that the victims from people who were killed by Winchester rifles, their spirits were held up in that building. And so she would try to correct it by just continually to add on to that building until she died.
Can you believe that, Tom? This lady thought her house was haunted, and so she kept adding on to it, thinking that she could get rid of she was trying to give the ghosts a way to get out. That, yes, Sarah wanted people to keep building, and that's a place that you can go and tour, you know, pretty much any time.
Yeah.
Although, you know, certainly around Halloween, it probably takes on a little special. Or, all right, on our haunted places tour here, where are we going next,
okay,
Gwen?
Okay, next is called Moss Beach Distillery. And it's not too far from Sacramento. It's in the East Bay. And it was built back in 1927, and they said that it was very popular at that time for bootleggers and what do you call them?
Bootlickers? Excuse me?
Bootlickers. It was originally known as Frank's Place. And I guess they had some really spooky people there, but one lady kept going there, and they call her the Blue Lady. I don't know how she got that name, maybe she wore blue. But apparently, in the 1940s or 50s, she was married, but she kept visiting there because she fell in love with Frank. And he evidently was a very dangerous person. But anyway, they were walking along the beach, and she end up getting attacked, and she dies. So ever since then, they've had phone calls, and people they have seen doors unlocked and small objects levitating. But the strangest occurrence, as they say, is that they're calling her responsible for it, is people can stay there, and they will, and women will go there, and they'll be missing one earring, and they'll complain about it. And after, I don't know, some period of time, the owner would find a pile of the single earrings somewhere.
Ooh.
On the property. Yeah, is that cool or what?
Wow. Our special guest, Gwen Duncan, with Cordially Yours Travel. We are traveling the haunted trails, if you will, you know, around Northern California and places. If you're looking for something to do on Halloween, we've covered bootlickers and
and all kinds
of
spirits.
That's bootleggers.
Oh, bootleggers. Oh, yeah, yes. That's right. Gwen, you got one more before we wrap it up here.
Okay. No, one, you would have to travel a distance, but I tell you, a lot of people go on cruises and they'll take out of L.A., which is a long beach, and there's the Queen Mary Hotel there. And that's recognized to be one of the most haunted places in California. And they said, as a former liner, I've been on it, and they tell you the story when you do a tour, and you can stay there. But they said the ship's incredibly haunted, and that there are strange noises and stuff constantly going on. But right now, what they say is popular is the first-class swimming pools. There were two women, spirits, that they see there. One died in the 30s, and one died in the 60s. Evidently, they drowned. But they both are seen as apparitions, and visiting psychics say that they can feel their presence when they're there. But there are also reports of a lady in white in the Queen's Salon, and all kinds of things. The first-class suites, you can hear children playing when no one's in there. And there's a handful of other reports about all kinds of other disturbances. So does that sound like a fun place to go and stay?
I have to ask you, it does. I have to ask you something, Gwen. Do you believe in ghosts?
You know, I'm going to tell you, no. But do you remember the Vineyard House that used to be popular up in Coloma? And that was supposed to have been haunted. It's closed now. And my brother-in-law used to work there as a bartender. And he spent the night there. And he said it scared the living bejesus out of him. And he told us all these different things that happened while he stayed there. So, and he's not one to make up stories. So I thought, maybe there is something to this. But I've not experienced it myself.
Uh-huh. See, Tom, Gwen's like a lot of people. It's no, I don't believe in this, but then there's an asterisk at the end.
Yeah. Right, right. They know somebody that they truly trust who does.
Yeah, who seems like it's kind of like me going out in the desert, you know, and deciding that, well, you know, maybe. You know what would be fun, Gwen? And I'm going to keep your list here, because I think next year what I'm going to try to do is take my little ghost box and go to some of these places and see if I can do my own little paranormal thing, and we might come back and talk. This has really been fun. You did some great research here and some great work. So I hope folks will go online and take a look at. There's just some fun Halloween things here. So thank you so much.
Oh, no, Swesky. You guys take it easy and have a good Halloween yourself.
Thanks, Gwen. Appreciate it. I'm going to go do some boot licking now.
You guys are crazy. You guys take care.
So thank you, Gwen Duncan. Tom, you remember over the last few weeks, speaking of haunted places, how we've been telling our listeners about the Mizpah Hotel and the USA Today contest and asking them to go online and vote to make it the most haunted hotel in the country?
Yes, I do recall. How are we doing? Is there any results yet?
Well, as of last week, we were able to tell people that the Mizpah was second in the voting, and kind of suggest that maybe if we all got online and voted a little more, that we might be able to make it the best haunted hotel in the country. And the results are in, and indeed, the Mizpah Hotel in Tonopah, Nevada, a place where I have stayed on a number of occasions, and I'm proud to say that Sports Leisure Vacations uses at least a couple of times a year, is the number one best haunted hotel in the country.
Wow, that's great. I'm assuming that's going to be great news for, certainly for them, but now when you get ready to travel there with your guests, your Sports Leisure Vacationers.
Yeah, the price of poker probably just went up $10, I'm guessing. but good for them. Well, we will get John McCormick, the man who runs the Mizpah, on the phone with us in the weeks ahead, and we've had him on before to talk about some of the strange, you know, he talks about how he locks the doors and leaves his office at night and comes back in the morning and there's half-smoked cigars and half-drank glasses of alcohol and stuff sitting on tables and nobody has the key and all of that kind of stuff. So if you believe in ghosts and you hear the stories about the Mizpah, there's very little. We have clients who have pictures where there were our orbs in the photos that were taken in the hotel. So if you believe in such things, it is the place where such things happen. So congratulations to all of our friends at the Mizpah in Tonopah, Nevada, for being voted the best haunted hotel in the United States.
Well, speaking of spirits, let's talk about spirits of another kind. Off to the Tahoe Craft Beer Trail. That's next here on The Travel Guys.
Come away with me in the night. Come away with me.
It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And it's time to head east to one of my favorite hangouts, and that's up in the Lake Tahoe area. Mark, tell us about our special guest today on the program.
We're going east, but not very far east, and that's probably a good thing because we might be drinking some beer when we get there, so it's probably a good thing that we're not too far from home. Emily Amarnathy is our guest today. She's the Director of Operations at the Tahoe Chamber, and she is welcome, Emily, to the Travel Guys.
Thank you for having me.
Emily is here to talk to us today about the craft beer trail. Craft beer, up until this point, was pretty much found in Oregon and Washington, but now it's kind of sinking down into California. And there are lots of places to get good craft beers up around Lake Tahoe. Emily, tell us a little bit about the craft beer trail.
So, yeah, we have kind of a mini explosion of craft breweries here in South Lake Tahoe in the last several years. And the Chamber has worked with these brewers to create a beer trail. We call it the South Tahoe Beer Trail, a nice map of all of the locations where you can buy these great craft beers.
And we should mention that we have a link to that map at travelguysradio.com. So if you're interested in knowing more about the craft beer trail as we're talking here, you can go there and get it or get it afterwards. How many breweries are part of the craft beer trail, Emily?
We have 9 stops on the trail, and it's kind of unique because it starts in one state and then you end up in a whole different state. You do cross the Nevada-California border on this beer trail.
Emily, let me jump in real quick and ask you, the Lake Tahoe area is pretty large, to kind of give people a visual if they can't get onto the computer and look at your trail map. What particular part of South Lake Tahoe does the beer trail comprise, if you will?
Well, it kind of follows our highway through the South Shore. So it starts at the junction of Highway 89 and Highway 50, and then it takes you all around the lake's edge to the casinos in Nevada and State Line. So it's about 8 miles long with all of the breweries spread out between.
Emily, you've got a pretty good sized representation of breweries there. Tell us, do any of them have special products, unique products, things that, that might, for a craft beer aficionado, might be something that would cause them to get in their car and start driving?
Well, yeah, they all offer their unique specialties. I'd say there's some that are a little more fun than others, more of a party scene, like the Lake Tahoe Ale Works is a nice tap house where you can actually serve yourself. With your tasting bracelet, you actually don't need to go up to a bartender. You can actually just go up to the tasting wall and create your own tasting experience. And then we've got our smaller, more intimate boutique breweries like Sedelis, which is kind of tucked off the main track, a little bit of a hidden secret for us locals. So there's all kinds of great, unique experiences along the trail.
Emily, can you give us some kind of an idea of what it might cost to sample craft beers along the trail?
Well, I guess that kind of depends on your preference of beer. They are, those stout, heavy beers can run a little bit more than the lighter pilsners, which I like to partake in. So it really just depends on how much you can consume and what level of, alcohol content you're interested in.
Now, Emily, a lot of people have done wine tours. Beer tours are becoming very, very popular, and some of our folks have, and some of them haven't. Is it similar to a wine tour in that you can pay a flat rate and sample at each one of the locations, or how does the pricing work?
This is a self guided tour, I would say. There are a couple companies in town that are doing sections of the tour, but there's not one that has the every stop included. So if you want to go to all 9 stops on the map, it's kind of self-guided. I would say get yourself a designated driver or hop into an Uber to do that. But yeah, there isn't a ticket price per se.
Got it.
Yeah, Tom, it kind of sounds like a nice way to spend a Tahoe weekend. You know, you could get your own transportation up there. And then as Emily is kind of suggesting, why you get your own private car service there to kind of drive you around to the brewery so that you're not endangering anybody on the road. And you've got, you know, you can play in the casinos at night. You can play on the lake during the day. So there's a lot to do in Lake Tahoe, as everybody here in the Sacramento area knows. But being able to go up and sample some craft beer. Emily, do they have any special events or anything? The breweries, do they get together and have any kind of a thing like for Oktoberfest or anything like that?
You know, we do have a big Oktoberfest in town, but it's kind of out past the brewery trails over at Camp Bridgerton. That's kind of our annual event. But we do have special opportunities here and there. Each brewery does some, you know, live music tasting specials here and there. But coming up in January, we will be partnering with California Restaurant Week to offer a fun experience at all of the breweries. So during that week of January, look out for some pretty cool specials.
One more fun thing to do in Lake Tahoe, the Craft Beer Trail. You can go to travelguysradio.com and we'll have a link there so you can take a look at the breweries and start plotting your trip up to Lake Tahoe to do some beer sampling. Emily, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been great.
Always something new going on in South Lake Tahoe. It was just a matter of time. Craft beers have just become enormous.
I know they have. I mean, it's just like everywhere.
I just don't understand how there's room for one more craft beer. About the time I say that, there's another.
I don't drink. Are you a beer drinker, Tom?
Yeah, not as much as I used to, but, you know, after the recent political climate, I can't decide whether I want to drink or not.
I'm wondering, beer apparently is the choice of beverage. Well, never mind. But does anybody drink like Budweiser or, you know, regular beer anymore? Or do you have to go have a craft beer and pay $7 for it?
Yeah, I know. It's not very cool of me to say this, but I'm just really a domestic light beer kind of guy. You know, you go to these craft beer places or whatever, and they offer all of these choices and so forth. And I'll still look for the blondest, palest beer on their list and then order that one. I mean, I'm not a big fan of having to eat my beer with a spoon because it's so thick and you can't see through it. And I know I'm probably insulting some people who love the craft beers.
I used to know a guy who drank Buckhorn beer because at the time it was $1.19 or $1.49 or something, a six-pack. And he said, what's the difference? After the first one, they all taste the same anyway. Here's an interesting note from our buddy Chris Elliott. You'll never believe what passengers steal from airplanes. I never thought about this, but flight attendants are talking about in this little ditty of Chris's about how people steal the vests, the get off the plane, the emergency vests.
No.
Why would you steal one of those? What possibly could that? Here's somebody, table settings. Chris says, I spoke with several passengers who admitted to taking forks, knives, spoons, glassware, salt and pepper shakers from first class. That's tacky.
Okay.
One passenger said, when I asked Lufthansa if I could buy the coffee mugs because they were really nice, she gave me 2. So see, there you go. Pillows and blankets. Now, if you give me a pillow or a blanket, I'm on an airplane and I want to take it, I'm going to take it with me. But apparently they're not all supposed to be taken with. That some of the nicer ones that are given out to premium customers are apparently, again, why would you charge somebody thousands of dollars for a ticket and then tell them that they have to give you, here's one I think that's kind of interesting. I might buy into this one. Air sickness bags.
Been there, done that.
Somebody who, no, not using one, collecting them.
Yeah, no. I have. I've actually pilfered.
Really?
I don't know why. I think it was more when I was first flying for the first time, it was a novelty.
Wow. This guy says he's collected 250 bags from 50 countries, including some from airlines that are now defunct. Things that people steal from airplanes. So, my friend, we are at the end of another edition of the Travel Guys.
There you go. It's a wrap. We'll be back next Sunday, 3 o'clock. Final words, Mark?
Remember to dance like nobody's watching.
All right. Stay well, my friends. We'll see you next time.